Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, November 21st. I'm Ray Graff. Dr. Ron Scharf of the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York, will be in the studio this afternoon to answer your questions about all your feline and canine companions. We call it Pets and Vets. It's always a popular show, so if you want to get in line, do so now. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551 on this call-in program, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Ron Scharf and your pets' questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's our Pets and Vets show, and here to take your calls is Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York. Dr. Scharf, a 1985 grad of the Veterinary College at Cornell, extensive background in conventional veterinary medicine. Always great to have Ron Scharf on the program. The number to call is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. I'm a semi-professional broadcaster. I should get these things correct. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number, 800-348-2551. Dr. Ron Scharf, welcome back to the show.
Ray, thank you so much. I always get such a great grand welcome from you. It's always a pleasure.
Well, great to see you here, especially since there was a snow squall right before you were due to arrive. I went outside to take the air, and I couldn't believe it.
I noticed that. You couldn't even see the markings on the road. Yeah, it was windy. It was horizontal snow. But we fought the elements to get here for Pets and Vets.
This is why you are great.
Couldn't miss it.
Our number is 800-348-2551. I tell you what, before we start the program, and the lines are already loading up, you have an event coming up. We might as well talk about that now.
We do. We have our second annual pet supply drive. This is for, just like there are people who go without food, and there's a food drive for them during the holidays. This is something that benefits the Schenectady Inner City Mission, the SICM called for short, and we actually give people discounts on exams for any client that brings in pet food kind of pet supply, not just food. If someone's not a client, we make them a client, and then they get the discount.
Well, that's terrific. And so, how do people find out more about that?
They go to our website, animalhospitalniskayuna.com. Or our Facebook page, Animal Hospital of Niskayuna. You have to scroll through some sweet photos of our animals.
Okay.
And then you'll see an announcement. Actually, we changed our cover photo to be the announcement for the pet drive. So you don't even have to do any scrolling.
Terrific. Well, Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest, and the lines are they're already full. So let's get right at it. And the number is 800-348-2551. When you hear somebody hang up, that's a good time to call. Anita in Clinton is first. Anita.
Hello. I have a male cat, 16 years old, and he cries in the middle of the night, wakes me up 2 or 3 times at night. I had him checked for diabetes, hyperthyroidism. He does have the beginnings of kidney failure. Anyway, the test came back negative, and I need to know how I can keep him quiet during the night.
So, Anita, that's a difficult one. It's also not uncommon for that to happen at 16 years of age. That's getting up there for a cat. That's kind of like a normal life expectancy for a cat. And so the question is, there's either something bothering him mentally or physically, or he's getting a little senile. So I would ask a client of mine who brought their cat in with this situation whether or not the cat's showing any cognitive changes. Do you see him staring at walls? Do you see him getting lost in corners? Do you see him acting or behaving in a way that's not usual for him? Because if you are, that's one possibility. If you don't see him showing any cognitive changes, then I'm assuming something's bothering him, and it could be the kidneys, it could be other things. So you'd need a physical exam. It sounds like you've had one. If all the blood work is good except for that early kidney situation, then it could be an upstairs, you know, sort of, so to speak, situation.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks,
good
Anita.
luck.
Dr. Ron Scharf, our guest today on this Pets and Vets edition of Vox Pop. We go to David in Rhinebeck. David.
Hi, my name's Dave and Dan in Rhinebeck. I have a 9-year-old Jack Russell female. Is a small dog. I got her as a rescue along with her father. And she's come down with, she keeps losing weight. And I've had her to the vet several times with all kinds of tests and everything. And I was wondering if there was some kind of food that you could suggest that I might give her to help her gain weight. She's always eating well. We feed her twice a day, Alpo canned food, and now she doesn't want anything to do with the in the morning. But in the afternoon, she'll eat it all.
Okay. So it might be that her appetite is off in the morning, David, but that it springs back in the afternoon?
Yes, it is. It's off in the morning, okay. But the afternoon is okay.
She has no trouble eating or chewing?
No.
Okay. And she's not drinking excessive amounts of water?
She is drinking water.
If she's drinking more water, then it could be something physical. So you'd have to look into whether or not an organ is falling down, a kidney or something else. Because whenever a dog or a cat starts drinking a lot of water, you want to look into it. So I know you said you've been to the vet several times. Has any blood work or lab work been done, David?
I had a lot of lab work done. Spent about $1,000 on her in the last 2 months.
That's a chunk of change.
We like her.
Yeah, well, good for you. So if that lab work showed that the kidneys were fine, the liver, the electrolytes, the sugar, et cetera, you say she has no trouble chewing because I would wonder about dental problems. But I would think about taking an X-ray to make sure there's no kind of problem in there. And if the X-ray tells us that there is no contraindications, I would try a medication called Cerenia, which is spelled C-E-R-E-N-I-A, which is very good not only as an anti-vomiting but as an anti-nausea medication. And that is assuming that there's no underlying problem that could be addressed, because if there is, that's always preferable, of course. The other thing is,
well,
there's a new product on the market, which is an appetite stimulant for dogs. It's called Entyce, which
Entyce.
I assume it's spelled with a Y, E-N-T-Y-C-E, maybe. But you definitely want to rule out physical problems first, and I would recommend taking an X-ray to make sure that there would be no contraindications to taking the first medication I mentioned to you. And if everything else, kind of is normal and you don't find any problems, then consider trying the Cerenia and or Entyce.
David, thank you for the call. Ron Scharf is our guest today. It's Pets and Vets on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. Nora is in LaGrangeville. Hello, Nora.
Hello, Ray. Hello, Dr. Sharp.
Hi,
boy,
Nora.
I thought I'd be number one. I got on so early.
I'm sorry.
You're number one in our book.
Yeah. I have two questions, please. I have two shelter cats, and my male cat, Jack, who is sitting right here listening to every word, he came from a cat house. So by that, I mean all the cats, like, roamed freely in this house, and they were never in cages like the SPCA. We've had Jack for about 5 years, and I have to say he follows us everywhere, and when we sit down, he's very loving, but he can show extreme, constant frustration, like he'll jump up on my PC and bite me, or you're reading the newspaper and he won't get off and he'll bite and scratch us. He can be super, super aggressive. And I think he's just, bored out of his gourd. So we did introduce Lucy from the SPCA to be a playmate. We do play with him and spend lots of time, but he just has not settled down, and we've debated taking him back to the cat house where he'd have more fun. But I'm looking for ideas on behavior modification or what your thoughts are.
Okay. So you have a challenging, behavior problems, especially in cats, are challenging. I would assume that the quote-unquote cat house would not necessarily be the best place for him, Nora, because a lot of cats are not social like dogs, and they don't like being in a big herd of cats. And oftentimes you'll have behavior problems because of that, because they were always worried about their boundaries being invaded or whatever. So I can't tell you, just on the basis of the information you just mentioned, why he's doing the biting business. Also, you said that you have already had him for 5 years, or was he in the cat house for 5 years?
No, we got him as a kitten.
Okay, good.
So we've had him for 5 years, and we love him, so we wouldn't want to take him back, but
excellent.
We just feel like he's really unhappy.
Yes, well, what is he doing? How do you know? What makes you think that he's unhappy? Maybe he likes biting people. I don't know. Like, why? What makes us know that he is unhappy?
Well, I assume the biting and scratching is not when you say, you know, Jack, no, or when he hops up on the newspaper every day and refuses to get off when I squirt him with a water bottle. I mean, I assume he knows that he's not supposed to be doing that.
So I think that I would also do aversive things such as blasting them with a water spray or a bunch of pennies in a can that you rattle very loudly to startle him, to do things that would give him a clear message. You know, yelling at a cat is not a clear message. That's blah, blah,
right.
blah, as far as they're concerned. But if they hear the sudden unpleasant noise, or if they get the sudden blast of the spray bottle, I think that you're going in the right direction. But you have 5 years of a bad habit happening. So you have an uphill battle, Nora, as far as breaking them of this bad habit. I totally think you ought to try. But you have to be very... You know, changing behavior in a cat's challenging compared to a dog. But I would try to think of ways that make it unpleasant for him. Maybe don't put the paper down on the couch. If he likes going on the paper, I would avoid leaving the paper in a place that he could get on it. And you have to, you know, let me interject that I'll schedule 1 hour to deal with the behavior problem in a client of mine, because there's a lot of history taken, there's a lot of questions, there's a lot of back and forth and comments and handouts that I give to people. So to reduce it to, you know, a 5-minute call here is a bit beyond the scope of this show.
And actually, we have to take a break. But Nora, if you need help with a sudden unpleasant noise, I could send my kids down for a couple of days.
Yeah, thank you, Ray. Yeah,
all right, we have to take a break here. Thank you for the call. Ron Scharf is our guest. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Pets and Vets, we'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC, Pets and Vets. Ray Graff here, joined today by Dr. Ron Scharf. And Ron, we'll get right back to the phones. A couple of emails here have come in. This one is from Emma in Stillwater. My question is, says Emma, do you have any tips for introducing kittens into a household where there is already a 17-year-old cat? Good luck, Emma.
Yeah, that's a tough one, Emma, because 17-year-old cat is set in their ways, his or her own ways. And to be introducing these young whippersnappers that are going to have no respect for boundaries or what the older cat, the way that he or she likes things to happen, can often be a challenge. Because at that age, what'd you say, Ray, 17 years old?
17-year-old cat.
At that age, they may or may not be able to express themselves in a way which will be convincing for kittens. Because... if an incumbent cat is doing their job, they need, just like people, to teach the newcomer the rules of the road in the house. And so that would be, you know, a deftly placed swipe from claws, if the 17-year-old has any, or a screech or a hiss or whatever. Some older animals may or may not have the energy or inclination to do that. If they don't, then they could be miserable. And what I would definitely recommend is that you restrict the kittens, at least for the first while, so that the incumbent cat, the 17-year-old, doesn't feel like abandoned in his or her own place and space. So you want to give him run of the house, at least in the beginning, and then see how it goes with small introductions, in other words, short introductions, just so you can gauge what's the energy like and who's acting like what. And maybe it would be better if the, one of the kittens is more aggressive than the other, then let the 17-year-old spend more time with the less aggressive one at first and then kind of ease it into the more aggressive.
Right.
Maybe put a leash on the more aggressive if he's or she has got a way of lunging at the older one. So you could prevent that, you know, put a harness on and a leash onto the harness in case there's any lunging going on. Those are ways that you could start.
Okay.
There's also a pheromone called feel-away, which I've mentioned many times, which often is good for inter-cat friction. Though with kittens, it's not so much friction as they're just acting like unruly youngsters. So the pheromone might not touch that.
Okay. And this one, actually, we have a double question here. One from Willa, aged 11, and one from Eve, age 8. The question from Willa: when we comb our cat, she gets all this dandruff. What is it, and how do we get rid of it?
So, some people have dandruff and some don't, Willa, and the same is true with animals, and it's very good that you're combing your cat because it's healthy for the skin, and it provides circulation, blood supply to the skin. But the dandruff part, I don't know what her health status is. If she's a totally healthy cat, Willa, then what I would do is put some omega-3 fatty acids into the food or into the cat. The omega-3 fatty acids are oftentimes good for dry coat. If it's a seborrhea, which is more of a condition, a skin condition, there are certain shampoos and spray-ons that might help with that as well.
Okay.
But just like people with dandruff, sometimes you can't get rid of it. So it depends on what's causing it, Willa. Good luck.
All right.
What about Eve?
Eve asks, can hamsters be trained?
Well, Eve, I first have to say that's my mom's name, so I always like that
name.
Okay,
all right.
Second, I would like to say that I am not the biggest hamster expert in the world.
All right.
Can they be trained? Well, they can go around a wheel, so I guess that there's something that they could learn. If they could learn that, I imagine that there's other stuff they could learn. I find with animals, Eve, that if you give them motivation, meaning a treat that they like, they are more inclined to do things that'll get them that treat than if they are not being provided with any kind of motivation. So whatever that hamster likes, whether it's a piece of carrot or something else, try working with that hamster and what that hamster likes and gets excited about, and then try to be creative and work around that.
All right, last email, and then we'll jump back on the phones here. This one's from Ted. And Ted writes, our dog was sneezing and blowing a lot of stuff out of his nose. Our vet did a culture and diagnosed Pasteurella. She prescribed 3 weeks of Cipro, but that didn't clean him up. He's on a second 3-week dose now. Is there a follow-up if he doesn't get better after this round? He still runs around, has a good appetite. And that's from Ted.
So, Ted, the Pasteurella ought to get better on its own. I didn't catch if there was a an age for this dog.
No, age.
Not to worry. The Pasteurella is a pretty common bacterium, especially in cats and rabbits. Dogs get it, too, and there are antibiotics that will fix it. So if the Cipro doesn't do it, I would try something else. If you already had the dog on Cipro for 3 weeks and it didn't get rid of it, I'd be looking for another antibiotic.
Okay.
You said that a culture was done, a culture and sensitivity?
I got to pull the email up here.
If it was done.
Did a culture and diagnosed Pasteurella. Yeah.
So there might be other antibiotics than Cipro that may do a better job. Don't ask me why the culture said Cipro was an antibiotic the bug would be sensitive to. There is another test if you want to get more involved, if the problem doesn't get better on a different antibiotic, called a PCR, which stands for polymerase chain reaction, which is a high-tech type of test that I use more and more for the last year or two, that'll tell you the big guns, so to speak, that will make a dog have a respiratory problem. Because, for instance, if there's a virus in there, it would not have shown up on the culture and sensitivity. That's a bacterial culture and sensitivity. But what if the bacterium, the Pasteurella, was there because of a secondary reaction to a virus that was already there in the first place? So the PCR might tell you information about that if you have a refractory situation.
All right, let's get back to the phones with Dr. Ron Scharf on a Pets and Vets edition of Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. Kathy in Tivoli. Kathy, you're on.
Good afternoon. Happy Thanksgiving to all.
And to you.
Thank you. You too.
I have a male. Thank you. I have a male neutered Siamese cat, and he's in a multi-cat household, and they swat each other from time to time. But one of his eyes had the lower eyelid three quarters of the way up, white. And I don't know whether or not I should take him to the vet. Everything is normal, his behavior, his appetite, and the eye is getting better. The eyelid is receding. It's only a quarter, and no pus secretions. He was outside as a stray, and he got some kind of wound in the same eye that just tears from time to time. So I got him Dr. Good Pet eye drops, and I managed to get a few eye drops in there. I'm wondering, should I let it be, or does this require a visit to the vet?
Okay.
Well, if it was up, whatever you said, Kathy, two-thirds or three-quarters, and now it's only up one-quarter, that's a good direction. The third eyelid, that's called the third eyelid, whose formal name is the nictitans or nictitating membrane. And it's a normal structure, and it will go up in response to either an infection, like a conjunctivitis or a pink eye kind of thing, or from an injury, okay? Now, I would want to know, is there any redness in the eye? When you pick up, when you lift up that upper eyelid, is the sclera, which ought to be white, is there any redness there? Or when you pull down the lower eyelid, there is a conjunctiva there, that's the floppy tissue, which ought to be pink, but it shouldn't be deep pink. So you can compare it to the other lower eyelid or conjunctiva to see if there's no redness and no discharge, and it's already getting better. I hate to say, but you may not need to go to the vet. But otherwise, yes, I would have the cat checked out. If it doesn't continue to get better, or if it gets red, or there's a discharge, or if you see the cat pawing at it, you know, rubbing at it or rubbing it along the rug, I'd have it looked at. There could be something underneath the third eyelid, like a foreign body, like dust or sand or whatever,
okay,
or an injury. But like I say, the redness, if it was an injury, you would likely see redness. I don't know how closely you looked at it because the cornea, which is the colored part, may hide redness unless you're specifically looking for it or you have an illuminated ophthalmoscope or something. So maybe a vet.
Okay.
Thank you. I'll keep my eye on it. No pun intended.
Nicely done, Kathy. Thank you and happy Thanksgiving. Over to, oh boy, let's go to Yandel in Poughkeepsie. You're on. Hello?
Hello, it's Rizzi.
Oh, boy. Hi. Hi. Hello. You're on.
Hello?
Hi. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi. Howdy.
Question.
Yes.
Does cats have good eyelids?
Ah, okay. Well, this dovetails very well with our last question. Do cats have three eyelids?
They do. As I just said to Kathy, they do have a third eyelid, Yandel. It's called the nictitating membranes, or the nictitans for short. It's a normal structure. You usually do not see it unless something's wrong, is going on. But the way I look at the third eyelid is I gently put a little thumb pressure on the upper eyeball, okay, over the upper eyelid, not on the eyeball itself.
Right.
And if you put a little gentle pressure on the upper lid, you'll cause that third eyelid to become more prominent, and you would see what it looked like. And they almost all of them, I think maybe even all of them, have a black margin. In other words, the leading front is black for a millimeter or two, and the rest of it's white.
Okay. Well, thank you for the call. And now we go to Karen in Pine Hill. Karen, you're on.
Yes, hi. I have a, can you hear me?
Sure.
I have a 16-year-old lovely buff Cocker Spaniel, and he wears a cone because he has two licking granulomas on his leg. I keep it bandaged, but sometimes I take the bandage off. Should I keep the bandage on forever, or should I take it off, or do half and half? And should I keep him on an antibiotic?
Karen, I would never keep a bandage on forever because eventually they irritate the dog. And the most you can get out of a well-placed bandage is a week or two at the outside, okay?
Oh, sure. After I take it off every 2 days.
Oh, well, that's fine, number one. Number two, sometimes you could try to find a cause for a lick granuloma. Sometimes you're successful, sometimes you're not. Sometimes it might be due to an allergy, sometimes it might be due to an old injury or a joint problem if it's over a joint. So it's always nice if you can to do a little investigating, but it is the case, unfortunately, that we often do not find the original cause. So what I'll do is I'll put on an anti-itch medication directly on the licked part, and then over the licked part, I mean proximal, I mean just above the licked part, I would put some bitter apple. Okay, I would not get the bitter apple onto the lesion itself. But where did you say these licked granulomas were? Are they on the limbs?
They're on the leg.
Okay, that's the most common. And what you do is, so when I say over, the bitter apple that does not go on the lesion itself goes in a semicircle or an arc above, you know, in other words, in the flight path of the tongue. So it gives the dog second thoughts about licking at it. And, you know, the cone, it would, you know, it's a shame to have to use a cone for the whole animal's life. I've done sometimes some acupuncture on lick granulomas, and they sometimes can mitigate and make the dog a little less inclined to lick at it. But if there's an allergy causing an itch, then it's hard to get that. You got to deal with the allergy.
Okay.
So it's always preferable if you can find the underlying reason. But if the dog got two of them, I'd wonder about, could allergies be an issue? Does the dog lick the paws?
He licks the inside of the cone. He likes to lick. So somebody suggested Prozac.
Well, Prozac, if it's a mental problem, yeah, that's a possibility that I would do that as a last thing. Karen, I would rule out all the other things that I mentioned, and then if it didn't do the job, fluoxetine is the name of Prozac in its generic form.
Okay. Karen, thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Ron Scharf is here, and we now go to Rita in New Marlborough. Rita.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 14-year-old golden doodle, and I've taken her to three different vets. The third finally had an answer for this hacking cough that she has, and he related it to weakness in her back legs as a neurological issue, a nerve problem, I guess, that's connected somehow.
You're thinking of laryngeal paralysis?
He did not diagnose it. He just said it's a neurological issue, and the cough is related to the weakness in her back legs.
Hmm.
Have you ever heard of such a thing?
Yes, I've heard of a neurological basis for a cough. There's no doubt about that. I've also heard of a neurological basis for weakness in the back legs. But a neurological cause that will affect both is a little more on the exotic side. I'm wondering, I don't know, like a myasthenia gravis or some one of these more, you know, funny duck type, you know, unusual conditions could possibly cause it. I'm trying to think of what to connect the back legs to the larynx or the upper airways with, and there might be something. Yes.
She is 14, and she's 60 pounds. She's not a real big dog, but...
Has she had x-rays?
Yeah, and actually she's had both knees replaced when she was 9. So there's been a tendency for weakness there anyway.
Well, what's the x-ray say? There was no problem in the lungs that might account for it?
Actually, she had a very... mild case of asthma.
Oh, well, then there you go. That's it.
So that's the cough.
Well, that could be the cause. I mean, asthma definitely causes a cough.
That's the cough reason. But as you said, it's not related to the back legs.
I'm not saying that it's not. I'm just coming up with a blank reader on what particular condition could connect a weak back end to a cough.
Gotcha.
They might exist.
All right.
Well, thanks a lot for the call, and good luck, Rita. We appreciate it. Who's next? Who's next? Looks like Christina. Christina in Berkshire County.
I'm going to lighten this up.
Oh, good.
Man, there's some heavy-duty problems out there.
Oh, yeah.
I have a 4-year-old male cat that was neutered at, 12 weeks old, but he has a lot of fun with my plush blankets.
Oh, boy.
And I thought that when he was neutered, he wouldn't have any desire, but he does. And it's kind of unnerving at times, let's say.
Even you talking about it is unnerving, so thank you very much. All right, Doc.
It's embarrassing to talk about, and after hearing all these things today, oh, my gosh, this is like light compared to all these really problematic things, but it's a problem.
Okay. I would disagree that it's light. I would disagree that it's not a big problem, Christina. I think that it is a big problem.
Is it a problem? Yeah.
Absolutely. A cat peeing on your
no,
rug?
He's enjoying.
Yeah.
Kind of fun.
He's not peeing. He's actually enjoying the blanket.
Yes. Okay. Does he at least take the blanket out for dinner first?
I always do.
Okay.
And
good.
Wash them with bleach.
That's fine. All right. All right. We have to take a break here, but I'd love to hear your answer here, Doc, real quick.
Me too.
All right. He stumped the band. Well done.
I think, you know, he was removed. I would imagine that he was. It had something to do with his young, tender age when he was removed from his mom and when he was...
Well, no, it was at 10 weeks, and then I got him, neutered early as I could because I wanted to make sure there was not going to be any spray.
Yeah, we get it.
I'm just wondering why he's loving these blankets. And I know, again, it's embarrassing, but...
Yes, it is.
I think he was removed from his mom too soon for his own. That's the best I can come up with,
How do you fix it? We're overdue for a break, but how would you fix something like that?
I think you try to do some behavior modification. I would set aside an hour to talk about it, try to gather information, make sure there's no physical problems, of course, and then give you some handouts and discuss ways to divert attention to other more
acceptable
pursuits.
I'm wondering if there was a partial neuterization.
Well, you know, he's either got two testicles or not. And so the question is, were both taken out when he was neutered? Because once in a blue moon, Christina, there could be an undescended testicle. It's called a cryptorchid. And if it was a rescue operation, and maybe they didn't feel like doing a major procedure, if they left one in, he has all the equipment he needs to be a little on the randy side.
Well, Christina, I'd hate to cut this short.
He needs to go to break. Go to break, my friend.
Yes, I do. Thank you so much. Oh, that was fun. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Oh, it takes all calls here on the program. And you know what? We'll rest up and we'll be right back. Okay, everybody's ready again to take off on the program. 800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. Ron Scharf is here. It's Pets and Vets, and the lines have been loaded since moment one. And, Doc, we'll try to get through as many of these as we can. We go to Ellen in Albany. Ellen.
Hello?
Is Ellen there? No? Okay, this is a bad sign. Tell you what, Ellen in Albany, if you call back, we'll get you right through. Let's try someone else here, and we'll go now to Marlene in Millbrook.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. So I have an adorable 4-year-old Pembroke Welsh Corgi who was born on the 4th of July. We were not there for her birth. Every time we sneeze, my husband or I, or open or close the window, she goes crazy. Literally barks, gets in our face, barks right in our face. And it's incessant until we calm her down. And this is a daily occurrence, 2 or 3 times a day, because my husband is allergic to her. So what do we do? We've done a bark collar. We've done aromatherapy oil. We've done behavioral therapy. We've opened and closed the window 100 times to no avail. None of this is working.
So the bark collar didn't work. Was that a citronella, Marlene?
No. It was a sound. It gave off a beep that irritated her and sent her into a depression. I mean, we couldn't take it. She would go off in a corner. She did have, I have to say, that she did have a traumatic experience when she was brand new with us.
What experience?
A traumatic.
Traumatic. What was that? Was that window related?
I don't know if it's related. So we had a guy come out into the electric fence. But before he put the collar on, he shaved her. and I think she got freaked out by the buzzing sound of the electric clipper, and she went nuts. And to this day, we can't put her on a leash. She won't go on the leash. She won't walk on a leash, because the whole idea was that he put the collar on, he would teach her how to walk around the property and see the flags. Anyway, none of it worked. So now she's basking.
So I don't know if she thinks there's a connection between the window and the fence guy or not. But you did say that you did some behavior therapy. What was that, with a layperson, a veterinarian, a behaviorist? What was that? How much effort was put into that, Marlene?
We kind of lost the sound there. Try it again, Marlene.
You're cutting out, Marlene.
You try it one more time, and then we'll let you go, and you can listen on the radio.
We opened and closed the door, the window, several times in hopes that she would get used to the sound. We would sneeze a lot just to get her over it, and it just doesn't work. None of that works.
All right.
Well,
I don't know what else.
What you need to do is a structured behavior modification, Marlene, with someone that knows behavior modification in dogs. And basically, what you're talking about, I'm going to get this into a 1 minute or a 2 minute summary of something that would take an hour. Like I told the previous caller, I'll set aside an hour to do behavior modification because it's complicated, okay? But what you do is what the professionals call counter conditioning and desensitization. The counter conditioning basically means teaching the dog a new behavior for her repertoire. That behavior is called settle. You get the settle into them, and then they understand that every time they hear that word, if they relax, they're going to get a great treat. Now, this doesn't work as well if the dog gets treats for doing nothing, okay? I always put a lot of effort and time when I get a puppy or a new dog for the first time talking more about behavior stuff than I do about physical stuff. I had a new client this morning. We talked about it last night. A new puppy, we talked about it. And part of my talk is what I call the nothing in life is free philosophy, meaning you don't give a dog anything that they like unless they've earned it. And that is earned by not only being obedient, but by being obedient in a calm fashion. Now, once that dog learns how to settle, okay, then you could do your desensitization of opening and closing the window a million times. But you start very, very small. You open the window a quarter of an inch, put the dog into a settle, and then open it a quarter of an inch. And if she does well, then you reward her. And then you do it a half of an inch. And then, you work in little baby bites as far as desensitizing the dog to that motion or sound. But you need first to do the counter conditioning, which is teaching the dog how to relax. And the way that you do that is by making it worth the dog's while to learn how to settle, because it'll be the key to all good things. So it's the nothing in life is free philosophy. It's the canon conditioning, which means teaching a new behavior for her repertoire. Then it's the desensitization. So you're going in the right direction, but your efforts need to be more structured by someone that's done this before. It's tough to reinvent the wheel with behavior stuff.
Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest here on Pets and Vets. 800-348-2551 is the number, and Mark in Salem is next.
Hi, Ray. No roosters today.
Good.
I'm sitting in a snow squall in the parking lot. I have I found out that with cats, and I've had hundreds of cats over a lifetime, that you have to speak cat. And I found out about 25 years ago, I had a mother cat with five kittens, and they were trying to get out through the picket fence, and she was running along the outside. And she was holding her claw out and holding her eyes squinted and hissing at them. So when I saw that, she's just telling them no. So I started using that technique. I squint my eyes. I put my hand up like a paw. And I open, bare my teeth, and I go, hiss. And I have been able to, about 90% of the time, break them of the bad habit.
Good for you.
That's great.
Cat,
I mean,
whisperer.
It works. I'm speaking cat.
Good for you, Mark. Well,
good,
thank you.
Good job.
How do the cats get along with the chickens, by the way?
They don't even, they don't pay any attention at all.
Well, I'll be darned. Oh, good for you. Well, thanks for the call, sir. Let's go over to Patty in Toronto. Patty, how can you be in Toronto?
Well, I'm driving from Toronto.
Ah, okay. Well, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking my call. So I have a beagle who's about 9 years old, and about 11 days ago, he got attacked by a Great Dane. So, you know, definitely different sizes there. Now, he's okay, and he's healing up nicely. The only thing that I've noticed is, so two of the, you know, puncture wounds from the bite have, you know, all of the puncture wounds have been healing, but two of them on his torso, kind of between them, it's as though the muscle is really, really tight. So it feels like it's raised a bit and it's tight when compared to the other side. Is that normal? Is that something I should be concerned with?
Yes. I would imagine.
Okay.
Wait, now, is it normal? Yes. Or is it something he should be concerned with?
Something he should be concerned with. My assumption, Patty, is that bacteria got into one or both of those nearby puncture wounds and that there is an infection that is causing that raised area is my best guess. Of course, without seeing the dog, I don't know. So what I would do, has the dog been treated or seen by a vet?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We took him to the ER that night. He's been on antibiotics for 10 days.
Ah.
And, you know, the wounds are healing nicely. Those two wounds in particular didn't have any pus coming out of them or anything like that.
Oh, then I take back my first thing.
Oh, boy.
I would wonder, could there have been an injury subcutaneously in between those punctures and in an effort to heal it over, fibrous tissue is eventually formed. So it's like a scar under the skin. And I'm wondering, could that be a possibility? Or else a cellulitis, which means an inflammation or infection of the sub-Q area that was not taken care of by the antibiotic that the ER gave you. So I would, it's very difficult. It's a challenge, Patty, say over the phone or over the airwaves, what's going on. That would be what I would start with.
Okay, Patty, thanks for the call. Now we go to Christine in Tivoli. Christine. Hello?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yep, you're on.
Thanks so much. So I'm calling with another cat question. We have sort of a behavioral slash health concern in our house. We have a blind cat that we adopted about 6 years ago. He's great. And we also then wound up bringing in a stray that was injured over a year ago, probably April 2017. And it turned out that he needed for surgery, and you know, sort of was missing a few handles, but that stray had FIV.
We missed a lot of that, Christine.
You became garbled in the first half of that sentence, Christine. Other than the FIV, we didn't catch anything you said in that sentence.
So the stray that we rescued when we brought him in for like an emergency surgery. And all of that, you know, the whole line, and it turned out that he had FIV when they did a blood sample. And so we were a little bit nervous about introducing him to the blind cat. We weren't really sure how the two would get along. And then, you know, it went very poorly, in fact. Mm. And, you know, anytime we have tried to introduce him, the blind cat sort of seeks him out like a little heat seeker and goes to bite him. You know, as it turns out, he's a biter.
Yeah.
And, you know, recently the blind cat, he wound up in the ER overnight, like in an oxygen chamber. It turns out he has asthma and he had a near fatal asthma attack. And I worry that if we were trying to introduce them again, that, you know, his anxiety might get the best of him and that, you know, his asthma might really, you know, act up again. You know, basically we're on this sort of this 12-hour schedule, right, where one cat goes into a bedroom at noon. And the other one comes out, and the other one, you know, this 12-hour schedule where they just never meet. You know, it's kind of, it takes up a lot of our time and concern. You know?
So, Christine, any idea how old the blind cat that you adopted 6 years ago is?
Rocky is probably about 8 years old now. Yeah.
Okay. It sounds discouraging that you're going to get them good together. I would definitely try the feel-away, which is the cat pheromone that's good for inter-cat friction sometimes. But given that the stray has FIV and that they don't get along, I don't know if it's possible, but I would try to keep them separate, because that cat could give the FIV to the blind cat. Blind cat doesn't need FIV. And especially with it having asthma. And if at all possible, I would try to, you know, split up, you know, just keep them separate from each other. You know, it's beyond the scope of, you know, us being on the radio now to start getting into all the things you could do to try to get these two cats to get along with each other. It doesn't sound like, it sounds like definitely an uphill battle. One that I would not be extremely optimistic about. But the feel away is definitely, it couldn't hurt. You know, you're putting them together, then that blind cat getting the FIV is just a bad scenario.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that some people are really really casual about FIV and say, you know, it's fine, it's not a big deal. And then, you know, but it is a big deal.
It is a big deal.
It is a big deal.
It's potentially a big deal, put it that way. You can have, it's like a person with HIV and they don't show symptoms for 10 years is not unusual. Well, a cat with FIV may not show symptoms and it may not be a big deal, but I always assume it is a big deal until proven otherwise. So, plus, he's got asthma. So, and he's blind. So, I feel bad for that guy. And the stray cat, you said the stray cat was the biter?
No, the blind one, as it turns out, is a biter.
He's blind and
I wound up in the
bite?
Hospital after they first tried to meet.
Wow.
Oh boy. Okay.
Okay. You know, I mean, you could start using drugs and tranquilizers.
For
and,
the animals.
And with the animals. Well, you or the animals or both. You know, it sounds like you guys are stressed out, too.
Okay.
That's outside of my domain. But,
all right.
But drugs for the animals, yeah, I could always do that. But it just, it may or may not help. It may or may not help.
Boy.
Yeah, that doesn't. There's a little bit of guilt. You know, I have a bit of guilt about, you know, now changing, you know, turning the blind one's world upside down. You know, we actually thought that he would like a friend, you know, because he seemed lonely
in
his little, you know, his dark little world, you know, when we were gone during the day. And so we thought it would be a fabulous pairing, but it really didn't turn out well.
If you want cats to get along when you introduce them, they they consider it a mission in life to not get along. That's how cats operate. They're oppositional.
All right.
I'm
well,
sorry that you have such a difficult situation, Christine.
Yeah, and then we'll have to leave it there. Dr. Ron Scharf, how do people get in touch with you at the Niskayuna Animal Hospital?
So the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna is a Facebook page, which we've got some great shots of our patients on there, as well as some other things. So you just go on Facebook, Animal Hospital of Niskayuna. The website's animalhospitalniskayuna.com.
All right.
And then there is a phone.
It'll be right on the website.
Yep.
Thank you, sir, for being here and braving the snow squalls and everything else.
You're so welcome, Ray. It's always a pleasure.
Support comes from Curtis Lumber, featuring kitchen and bath showrooms with national designers, Merlot cabinets, Cambria quartz countertops, consultations available, curtislumber.com. Nine Pin Cider Works, Albany, featuring hard cider made from local apples, now serving pizza, light fare, beer, wine, and spirits, and tasting room, open Tuesday through Sunday, ninepincider.com. Mother Earth Storehouse, offering a variety of seasonal and holiday foods and dessert items, serving the Hudson Valley with organic and all-natural foods since 1978, MotherEarthStorehouse.com. And Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany, Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, Careers in Transition, LLC.com. Thanks again to Dr. Ron Scharf of the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna for joining us today. Thank you for listening and for all the great calls. Sorry if we didn't get to yours. Zach Malloy was our engineer. Your phones were answered by Carol Lapani. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. No Vox Pop tomorrow or Friday as we celebrate Thanksgiving. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy your family. Be safe. We'll see you Monday.